Bears fans, this is Take the North.
What's the reason to duck? It's here. There's no reason to duck.
With your hosts, Dan Wiederer and Mark Grody.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Take the North podcast, along with Dan Wiederer of the Chicago Tribune and frequent valuable contributor to 670 The Score. I am Mark Grody of Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Danny boy, what's going on, man?
Not much. We're coming off the first session of OTAs at House Hall, and for a May 21 pop-in in Lake Forest, felt like there was a lot to get at. Do you agree that we were in there, and it felt like it was live action from the time we set foot in practice to the time the last interview was done?
It had new coach adrenaline for sure. And you know, I think I had to, and we'll get into this, but I personally was being careful not to project too much or to compare too much on previous regimes, because everybody wants to know, what is it like out there? Is it different? There are some differences, but it's not like the practices that we saw Matt Eberflus run in the past, or Matt Nagy, or choose. I did not cover John Fox. Only you could speak to those practices and the practices that we got to see. Look, Matt Eberflus ran a decent practice from what we saw. Yep. And I know players that he ran the fast practices. They seemingly were well organized. This practice may have been a little bit louder from the head coach's perspective, but I don't want to sit here necessarily. We've done a lot of denigrating of Matt Eberflus, and I'm sure that will continue because it is a vantage point that we always have to look at. But it's not like it was that different of a practice, I think, from previous regimes.
Look, it's an organized team activity practice without pads, helmets, shorts, t-shirts. It's basically what we're dealing with. You and I talked not long after Ben Johnson was hired about the temptation in the outside world, particularly among Bears fans, to bite every shiny lure that's out there and to feel like, oh, this is different than ever before, and we found the solution, and this coach is loud and he yells at his starting tight end, and I've never seen a practice this detailed and this intense. I was already feeling it in that room yesterday. People in the media room tempted to swim toward that lure, bite on it, and attach some sort of grand significance to it. Like what I said coming out of there yesterday on Wednesday afternoon was that it's cool to observe. I think the process of drawing conclusions is a long way off.
Long way off. Yeah. I mean, I had a caller ask me that exact question on The Score where I was doing the show from Hallis Hall. Say, hey, is the practice a lot different? I said, I mean, there probably are, but it's kind of hard. Other than Ben Johnson's yelling, it's pretty difficult to discern. And it didn't look that, especially when it's an indoor practice, it didn't look that different. Now, there are going to be observations that we were going to make about what went on the field yesterday, and things like, including the offensive line, who was there, who wasn't there, where guys were playing, who's getting shots at, who's getting that third linebacker spot as well. But let's get to some of the Caleb stuff right now in our opening drive.
It's time for the opening drive.
Well, let's start with the fact that Caleb Williams did not speak to the media yesterday. We had been getting word of that for a couple days. And as people know, that this is in regards to the upcoming book written by Seth Wickersham, of which there was an article which previewed some of the things, essentially, that the Caleb and his father, Carl Williams, were looking for ways to circumvent the Bears. Carl, his father, did not want him to go to the Bears. Caleb Williams had spoken reportedly about wanting to go to the Vikings early on. Caleb and his father questioning the previous coaching staff, and Caleb sort of being reportedly left alone to view tape by himself. But again, ultimately, it was Caleb Williams who decided to come to the Bears, and the Bears, or Caleb, or either or, decided that Caleb wasn't going to speak, which kicks the can down the road.
Yeah.
I will start by saying, at the end of our podcast, the last episode that we did, I said I would be shocked, Dan Wiederer, if the Bears did not trot Caleb Williams out there. And you basically looked at me and kind of said, I don't know. You had the Weederer eyes going. You're like, Grody, yeah. Big wide-eyed, blue-eyed Weederer. So, Grody, are you sure about that? And I'll be damned, Dan. I was walking out to the Walter Payton Center with our friend Patrick Finley of the Sun-Times. And he's like, hey, by the way, he's like, I listened to your podcast. And he's like, I heard you saying that you didn't think that you thought that Caleb would speak. He's like, have you not been here? Have you not worked with the Chicago Bears before? And I guess I am just a little bit naive, Dan. You were right. You were right.
Well, it's why I gave you those maniacal Weederer eyes. You might call them Luther Burden eyes in the modern era of 2025. Yeah. Very serious.
Uh-huh.
Very. Are you aware of what happens here? Look, like, I'm not going to get up in arms about this. I was surprised by it. I was mildly disappointed by it. I think strategically as an organization, I don't think it serves the Bears to let this storyline breathe for another week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. I was asked on the Mully and Haw show on 670 The Score on Thursday morning what I needed to know next about this story, and it was pretty simple. I need to hear Caleb's voice on all of this, right? I need to know what his perspective is on all of this. I need to know what his present-day thoughts are on being with the Bears, being with this current coaching staff, with this current front office, and his faith that he and they can get this thing right, because there was obvious reticence going into the draft about whether he wanted to be here. We heard from a lot of people on Wednesday to kind of tie some bows on some things, but without Caleb, it doesn't mean a whole lot. And so that's the next portion of this. Grody, if he doesn't speak until June, you've now given this a second calendar month of shelf life, right? And you've turned it into a national conversation the next time that Caleb stands up at a podium and says anything about this. And the other part of this is this wasn't just something that leaked through anonymous sources and back channels. This was Caleb and his dad being on the record with the author of a book to put this stuff out there, right? Like that takes some forward understanding and really some assertiveness to do that. And so I need to understand what was behind that, why they were interested in doing that, why they wanted to share that, and what they've been dealing with since it kind of surfaced in the public forum.
Yeah, and you know, the question that I want to ask that is relevant, and like it's fair to dig at some of that. I know some people get tired of the story, and I understand that, but everything in the past can be relevant to the future. And Caleb, did this set you back? Was your growth stunted? It's easy for me to look at it and say, well, if you didn't learn some things that you should have learned with the reviewing of tape and all of that kind of stuff, did it set you back? Why didn't you talk to somebody about it? And, you know, as far as the stuff that came out, were you cool with it, like, ultimately? And I'm sure he's not going to break bad on his dad because he loves his dad and looks up to his dad and all of that kind of stuff. But even going forward with that kind of stuff, with, you know, commenting and maybe the passive aggressive nature of some of the tweets last year, like, is this going to continue? Is this going to be part of the story going forward with Carl Williams and the Chicago Bears? Like, is there an extra, you know, coach in the room right now looking over this organization and nitpicking it?
And good phraseology about the passive aggressiveness of it all, because even with these excerpts in the book, it comes across as a little bit passive aggressive at taking these shots at the Bears organization as justified as they are, right? Like, every fear that they had about the Bears was warranted in year one. When you experience a rookie season like Caleb Williams did, where the head coach and the offensive coordinator are fired 17 days apart before you even get to the month of December, you have been subject, as we've documented many times on this podcast, to dysfunction and disruption and everything else that you'd want to phrase it. When you walk into a place of employment with your antenna up and your head on a swivel and wondering, hey, is this the best place for me professionally? Is this the best place to get my career launched? And then you experience that. There's a process now of creating buy-in and trust in the new people that are going to take ownership of your career. And these new people were chosen by some of the old people, right? And so now Caleb's got to cross this bridge in a year two, and he's got to do it with full trust and full confidence and full buy-in in where they're going. If he doesn't have that, we've got problems, and those problems will go from really small to really big, really fast once the games start being played. And so that is something that, like, I need to hear Caleb take ownership of the situation. I need to hear his perspective from a microphone or elsewhere to just understand where his headspace is at right now and how he's going to get this thing in the right lane when it obviously had detoured into the wrong lane for most of 2024.
In the meantime, in between time, our back to our hero, Ben Johnson, the hero of the day, the preseason hero, man. Ben Johnson was left to discuss the drama surrounding Caleb Williams. And to Ben Johnson's credit, he took it upon himself to bring it up before he was prompted by the media. So why don't we take a listen to a lot of what Ben Johnson said in regards to Caleb Williams, including Ben Johnson taking the first shot at Caleb Williams in a good way.
Come to my attention that the quarterback's been out in the media over the last week. And just to get out in front of that a little bit, I just wanted to say I wasn't here last year. And so I can't speak too much in terms of what it was like before he got here and when he got here last year. But from my 4 months on the job, he's been outstanding to work with. And we just are focusing on getting a little better every day.
And what's your process of building the trust with Caleb and getting his full buy-in under your watch?
Yeah, it starts with developing a rapport and a trust, and that's earned over time. You don't walk in day one and expect that to be achieved. And so the more time we spend together, he understands that I have his best interests at heart and vice versa. He's going to go out there and play as well as he possibly can, not just for himself or me, but for the whole team and the city. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. So we're very much aligned in terms of what we want to get done, and it just takes more time on task in terms of getting on the same page with how we're going
to
do it.
Are there ways that you watch film with your quarterbacks that might be, does it vary from coach to coach? When you've got these four guys here, are there things that you're teaching them that they need to, you know, see the way that you see it? Is that a part of like this part of the time of the year? Is that part of the process of teaching them? Or
yeah, everyone's different. I've been around a number of coordinators, a number of quarterback coaches. And so, I would say my style is kind of a combination of everything that I've been around and I've come to learn and love and appreciate. And so there's a process that I believe in, that we believe in as an offensive staff, that we're adhering to this springtime, and we're going to stay true to that, how we're going to develop that position in particular. And those guys are doing a great job working hard right now.
What do you think when you hear it uttered, as in from the article, from the upcoming book, that Chicago is where quarterbacks go to die? Like, from a distance, did you see that? And what do you think when you hear that?
I love it. I love it. I love the opportunity to come on in and change that narrative. That's where great stories are written. And so we're looking to write a new chapter here, 2025 Chicago Bears, and looking forward to the future.
I believe him, Dan, as for that last part when he says he loves it, because I look at it as all of this stuff, I bet he called Seth Wickersham and said, hey, what else you got, man? Because this is intelligence for him. He can flip the script. He could say, what bothered Caleb Williams? What bothered his father? Because if his father is going to be a character in this Bears story, he's probably got to know what's said. So he could take all that stuff and be like, okay, I'm going to be the coach that does, you didn't learn how to watch tape properly. I love watching tape. I love doing that kind of stuff. If you didn't learn this, didn't learn how to be a professional quarterback, didn't learn how to protect yourself, I got this. So I think that it's nothing. And as he said at the very beginning, as he should say, as so many coaches have said, I wasn't here for all that. Don't put that crap on me, man. It's true. And now he could be Ben Johnson superhero in the preseason.
Are you a Pulp Fiction guy? Did you watch Pulp Fiction back in the day? So it reminds me of the bartender. My name is Paul. That's between y'all, right? Like that. that was kind of the Ben Johnson statement there that you mentioned there. The one phrase that I wrote down as we listened to that a second time was just to get out in front of that. How many times have we heard a Bears coach say just to get out in front of that? Rarely, right? Like they let the fire burn all the way up to their chest height. And then they're like, oh God, we got to get the extinguisher out. And Ben was like, hey, look, there's a little bit of a burning ember over there. I'm just going to squelch it with this fire extinguisher and try to move on. I appreciate that. The willingness to bring that up before anyone else had to bring it up. It's the story of the day. Thanks for not making it awkward in bringing it to the table, right? Like, let's just be real with each other here. Let's get out in front of this and talk about that. You mentioned something there about the the seizing an opportunity and the excitement to do that. Like, Ben Johnson understands big picture that if Caleb Williams becomes the first quarterback to ever throw for 4,000 yards in this franchise, if he throws for 30 touchdowns, if he takes those numbers to 5,040, if he wins 3-4 playoff games, if he gets into a Super Bowl, Ben Johnson may have himself a statue out in front of the new stadium, wherever it may be. Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The excitement for somebody as driven and eager and enthusiastic to compete as Ben Johnson is hard to describe, but he displayed it on a May Wednesday in the first season on the job. And I love that. Like, just lean into it. Who knows where this story ends, but Ben understands what the opportunity is to take the pen in his hand and try to write it. So that's some cool stuff. I do think there is a process here, and it marries up with some of the stuff we talked about earlier in the week of building the trust and the buy-in with Caleb and understanding that that isn't going to happen overnight and that there's going to be some rough moments along the way. And there's going to be a give and take in the relationship that has to evolve and come to a sweet spot for the Bears to go anywhere. And so that process is still really early on here. And I think both guys are still getting to know how each other ticks, and they're going to have to feel it out so that it ticks in a way that, it's a functioning clock and not a time bomb, right? And like, so that's a process that will be ongoing continually. I think Ben realizes that. I think the next step is Caleb realizing that and vocalizing it, and we'll see where they can take this ride, because it's got a chance to be really, really notable one way or the other.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, Ben Johnson, as we now know, badly wanted this job, made it very clear in the interview in the beginning of his interview, made it clear at the end of the interview. Who knows just how long he had been eyeing this job. And part of why he wanted this job was because of number 18, Caleb Williams, the quarterback. And he looks at that as a true challenge, not just as a true challenge, because what we get far away from in all of this is that at its root, Caleb Williams is still a brilliantly talented quarterback who just needs some molding, some tweaking, some getting things right. It's easy to, after the disaster of last year, and probably more poor moments than great moments for Caleb Williams last year, it's easy to forget at times that this guy has generational talent and the talent to be great, to be elite. It's just, it did not form in 1 year. He is culpable for it, Caleb Williams, and so is the coaching staff.
Right. And the other thing that we kind of got a little bit of a window into on Wednesday was kind of the reaction of teammates to all this stuff that came out. Now, we only heard from a handful of defensive guys plus Joe Tooney on Wednesday. And the sentiment was kind of like, since Caleb's been in the building, none of that has shown itself, right? Like, I understand what was written in that excerpt, what's going to be coming out in the book, but in the, 15 months or 13 months that he's been here, haven't felt any of that tension or sort of annoyance at being a Chicago Bear and having your career in the hands of an organization that hasn't handled a lot of quarterback careers very well. And so I guess that was refreshing and encouraging to hear from guys. I think Kevin Byard and Grady Jarrett and Tremaine Edmonds among them. But there's a lot more to the story, right, that remains to be written. And like, as the hub of energy in that locker room, as the central figure of this entire thing, Caleb's got to, again, take ownership of all of this and get everybody in the right frame of mind. Because if everybody's kind of looking over their shoulder, that leads to some really bad things. And you want to get that out of the way as soon as possible. And back to your initial discussion, by not having Caleb talk this week, you've given this story a heartbeat into the summer.
Yeah. Well, no doubt. And I can't wait to, talk to, whether it's privately or just with a couple of us, whatever it turns out to be, DJ Moore, to see what he thinks about it all, because he was part of this last year. He was a person that was circled in some of this and may have been at times a victim of the lack of Caleb Williams development. Jim Miller, the former Bears quarterback, was on The Score yesterday, and he was talking about how, the reason DJ Moore went out of bounds is because he felt like, from DJ Moore's perspective, I got a quarterback here who doesn't know the routes here at this point, that, and he never should have done that, DJ Moore, but he did kind of excuse DJ Moore a little bit, the frustration part anyway, that things weren't going right, whether that was Caleb's fault, whether that was Shane Waldron's fault, whoever fault it wasn't right. So I'm looking forward to talking to him. And man, don't you wish Keenan Allen was still in that locker room, man?
Yeah, and Mercedes, right? Like Mercedes, a couple guys that you'd like to just get some thoughts on.
Yeah.
But though, like, you know, the big picture here, right? Like when we zoom out on these things, the Bears cracked open the safe and they hired Ben Johnson to be their head coach with the intent on getting the absolute best out of Caleb Williams going forward, right? And like, so that's where we are now. That's present day, and that's what has to happen here in the coming weeks, in the coming months, in the coming years. Those guys have to navigate this terrain together and figure out the most productive way, one, to help Caleb grow, and then ultimately to help him have success, because without success, all this other stuff is noise. And we've lived it with Mitch, and we've lived it with Justin, and we, you know, to the extent we lived it with Jay, where it's just, if you're not successful, it just becomes a draining exercise in being a Chicago Bear.
We shall revisit the topic for sure. Who knows, between now and June or whenever Caleb Williams speaks about it and other offensive players that we just mentioned. But let's get to our second part. This is part two of the podcast. We don't have a name for it. So part two, let's talk more about Ben Johnson and one of the themes of yesterday. Again, we were all out in the Walter Payton Center, and maybe the audio is a little bit more clear there. Some of us were watching from above, and then at times, at least I went downstairs on the sideline as well. And one thing that was prevalent, Dan, was the voice of head coach Ben Johnson. People want to know what was different relative to a Matt Eberflus practice. Like, it was organized well, like, quite frankly, Matt Eberflus's practices were too, and Matt Nagy. But Ben Johnson could be heard out there in his first couple of forays, having the full team together on the grass, as we say, as a head coach in the National Football League. Dan, what did you think about his loud voice in the Walter Payton Center?
Yeah, so I've been consistent over the last couple months in saying that, like, I've really enjoyed the initial encounters with Ben and understanding how hot that competitive fire burns. And when it can burn that hot during a OTA practice in May, you know how it's going to burn when the stakes are much higher. But Ben understands that the only way to be successful when the stakes are much higher is to take every single practice rep very seriously. He's promised that since the day he got up at Halas Hall and was introduced as head coach, that he was going to be the coach of detail and accountability and really overseeing this thing at a really intense level. Now, again, the last coach did that too. He had an acronym. He was looking for hustle and intensity and takeaways and taking care of the ball and situational smarts, and every practice rep was going to be graded. So I have no idea what the end results of this are going to be. But from a personality standpoint, I think the time we've spent around Ben since January until now gives you an insight into just how competitively intense he is and can be. I love it. I personally think it's going to be fun for Bears fans to go on this ride with a guy who wears it outwardly. You know, we've sat through Mark Trestman, we've sat through Eberflus, we sat through later year John Fox, and I think this city is eager, Lovey to an extent, is eager to have a coach that has some outward emotional chutzpah to him, right? Like that wants to be there. And so my first impressions of Ben running practice are similar to my first impressions of talking to him, is that he is really, really serious about reaching the peak of his profession. And that requires an every minute focus on every detail.
I think a way to sum it up, as you went through all those coaches and you're correct about their demeanor, is fans saying collectively, why aren't you as pissed off as we are? Especially with Matt Nagy, and I love Matt Nagy, but
Nagy out of the, I forgot to mention, out of the group, he had the most fire of all of them, right?
Yeah, he had fire, but you never heard him like calling guys out or getting in guys' faces. And maybe he had that fire, but his fire, I hate to say, his fire was very positive. So, which I know sounds ridiculous, but sometimes you want to, like, from a fan, you want to hear him call the, like, that wasn't good enough, that sucked, that was bad. Yeah. You know, I necessarily have to call out individuals, but just get pissed off when you have another awful loss.
So Grody, I've never been able to shake post game of Washington. And really, like the 9 minutes that Matt Eberflus spent in front of the podium,
confusion.
And and just there was no sense of this is not acceptable, right? Like there was no sense of that, and it was
that's the word
that for me was where it was like, and you've heard since from players that was when they were like, WTF, you know, like what are we doing here? Some dude just cost us a football game because he was celebrating, and the message is we got to stick together. You know, we got to stay together. And I like what we did there when we gave up the free 13 yards to shorten the helmet. Like, no, that's not it. And so anyway, to tie this back to Ben, I think, you know, you feel that intensity in a practice setting, and then you hear from some of the players afterwards about their initial response to it. Again, I always say that because this stuff can resonate. All you said, new coach honeymoon earlier.
Sure.
This stuff can resonate in May, June, July, and August. The key is to have it resonate in December when you're playing meaningful football games, right?
Amen.
So we'll track that when we get to that point. But yeah, I think you heard some really positive vibes from players about, okay, yeah, like I'm ready to get on this boat.
Yeah, we'll hear from Tremaine Edmonds in a second on that, but why don't we let Ben Johnson himself talk about his demeanor and his being questioned about his his aggressiveness out on the practice field. Here's Ben.
We're obviously getting kind of used to watching you on our practice, your mannerisms,
What'd you think?
Well, I was going to ask you, the amount of agitation you saw today, is that typical Ben Johnson, or is that just early growing pains with what's going on?
You saw agitation today? Yeah, no, I thought that was normal, so I'll work to get my body language under control. I'm talking about that with the players, so I need to do a better job myself. I'm on it.
I don't know if I don't want him to get his body language under control.
I'm not sure that was all sincere either. I think there was some tongue in cheek to that too. I'm like, oh boy, you think I'm too agitated? Oh boy,
yeah.
better go home and work on that. I personally appreciated that back and forth. I appreciated the questioning from Adam Hogue. I appreciated Ben's willingness to be playful in the response. I think there's some interplay there, and we've talked about it for a long time that as people that have to be in that room so often throughout the calendar year, you want to have some fun in that room. And I think we're going to have some fun with the back and forth with Ben, because he's willing to have a conversation. You know, he's not stiff, and there's a self-confidence and a self-assurance there that, again, like, it could be the fire that takes the Bears to new levels, or it could be the fire that burns the whole thing to the ground. But it's there, and I love it initially, because I think you heard some sarcasm in his voice there.
Really?
Like,
oh, for sure.
You know,
I mean, just even being playful and saying I agitate. Oh yeah, really? Yeah, I'll work on that. But the part where he says, you know, he talked to the players about, I don't know, was he joking about that, or was he like, hey guys, sorry, I know that I'm a little bit loud out. I mean, I don't need him adjusting or changing this early, that's for sure.
I'm not going to compare myself to an NFL football coach, but I am, as you know, a 12U baseball coach currently, and like, I can be a bit of a spaz, right? Like, I can wear my emotions outward. You know, that's 98% of the time it's very positive. A couple percent of the time, it you know, the competitive tension gets you, and so I appreciate people that wear that passion on their sleeve and aren't afraid to deal with whatever reactions are brought to them.
I'm not going to say who or what or when or even why, but one of Dan Weeder's greatest quotes to another human being one time was, quote, at some point in time, you are going to have to do your job.
I recall that. I could name you the day. I could name you the circumstance.
Maybe Dan will share that down the road at some point in time. That's a tease for maybe a show 2 years down the road.
I said it in a different tone than you just delivered.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I did not do it justice, but that was like, oh, Weeder, I like this guy.
So maybe that's why I feel a click with Ben, because I feel like that's in him. And I think you saw that some yesterday. I think the one moment that everyone's kind of highlighted is him getting up Cole Kmet's butt for not being lined up before a play.
Yeah. Right?
And that's a veteran captain that you're not afraid to just get in his grill and tell him this is not good enough.
Yeah, it's like, oh, wait a minute, you don't know about Cole Kmet, coach? You got to be nice to this guy. He's the
two-time good guy award winner.
He's a good guy. He's from Chicago. We all love him. We all talk to him. He's on the radio. He's on podcast.
Bears fan and a Cub fan.
Yeah. He played baseball at Notre Dame, man. I don't know if you know about this guy. That's not a guy you could talk to like that. Let's hear from Tremaine Edmonds on Ben Johnson.
Yeah, definitely competitive. I wouldn't really say surprising. You know, obviously we played each other in Detroit, but just getting to know him as a man, I mean, that's what you look for. You want a coach that's fired up. You want a coach that got energy like that. And you want a coach that cares about winning and winning, you know what I mean, in a dominant fashion. And I definitely, you know, feel that energy for him. Now, this is just our second day of practice, but at the same time, like, you feel it. You know what I mean? Just having conversation is like, nah, this guy want to win. Like, and that's what it's about. Just as players, you know, that's all of our mindset, you know what I mean? So it's about putting everybody's mindset together and really just going out the door, to be honest.
What do you think about Maine?
Yeah, you know, like Maine said, a dog wants to be with a dog, right? And so they're trying to bring the dog out of everybody, and Ben's going to try to push those buttons to do that. Again, you know, I've said this a couple different times that, like, he has to learn over this spring period into the summer whose buttons he can push in which ways, right? Like, that's part of being a head coach, is having the emotional intelligence to know, like, who's going to take it right and who's not, you know? And so that's a little bit of a balancing act and a tightrope that you've got to walk. But I think you hear Tremaine giving some perspective. Yeah, again, it's day two of practice, but also being like, there's some energy here that's worth kind of grabbing the rope and riding the wake behind.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt about it. Switching gears a little bit here, there the Tush Push, as people probably know, will stay. It will continue to persist. It was they voted for the Tush Push. The Bears, to be real, I think it's been confirmed, the Bears were not interested in having the Tush Push back.
Correct.
They did not want it there. And so Ben Johnson, this may have been a company line that Ben Johnson gave in regards to the Tush Push, or maybe he just truly feels this way. But this was a fascinating Ben Johnson moment with your colleague from the Chicago Tribune, Brad Biggs. Biggs time. Here's Ben on the Tush Push.
What are your thoughts on the Tush Push? It's going to stick around. Group teams try to overturn the vote.
Man, I tell you what, does it become an explosive play ever? Have you ever seen a Tush Push become an explosive play?
Does it become a first down or a touchdown?
Yeah, I like explosive play. I like big plays. So I'm not a big Tush Push guy myself.
I love every bit of that.
It's another example of the back and forth, right?
Yeah.
Like, the ability to have back and forth is going to be a ton of fun.
Uh-huh.
I don't know that I fully buy into Ben's philosophy on this.
I'm a little surprised.
The Eagles have scored.
He doesn't appreciate that creativity. Come on.
I did the math on it. The Eagles have scored 648 touchdowns on the Tush Push since 2022. So it obviously works for them. This is really interesting, Grody, because the proposal was made by Green Bay to get rid of the Tush Push. And in order for it to be banned, they needed 3/4 of the teams to be in agreement. Well, they got 22. They got more than 2/3 there, and they were 2 votes short of getting this ban. And so it was really close, but the 10 teams that sided on keeping it are the 10 teams that are going to be the ones that march forward saying, yeah, watch this. The Bears will play the Eagles this year, as we know. One of the teams that has mastered this craft, they play them on Black Friday. And so it's going to be Ben Johnson and Dennis Allen's job to find out a way to defend the Tush Push in those situations. I did talk to Dave Burkett, our friend in Detroit, who's covered the Lions forever. And he said, I don't think the Lions ever used it. If they did, it was one time. So Ben Johnson didn't ever have that in his playbook. I'm interested to see now, to get back in the film room a little bit and see what did the Lions go to when it was 3rd-and-1, 4th-and-1, you know, goal to goal from the one. What are the plays that they go to? And obviously Ben's got different recipes to get that ball moving down the field and across the goal line. Fascinating though, because again, more than half of the league, there's a majority of the league that doesn't want this play still around. And it's going to be still around for at least another year until they can continue this discussion. And the main reason for opposing it that's been presented has been the health and safety concerns. And I don't know that, you know, there's been a whole lot of documented evidence that's swayed people that there's actual data that the play is dangerous, because there haven't been many injuries or catastrophic injuries, which is the fear.
Right. And I also think it's going to be interesting, as you mentioned, the Bears play the Eagles this year. Will the Eagles use that every single damn time against the Bears, because they were one of the dissenting votes on this?
Of course. There's no question about it. We did also have a chance on Wednesday to talk to Grady Jarrett, who, as a defensive tackle, is a guy who's going to be in the center when teams decide that they want to get their quarterback down low and push his ass over the line to gain or the goal line. And so I had a little back and forth with Grady on what his take on the tush push is, and it's a little different than Ben's.
I mean, shoot, you got to stop it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, at the end of the day, I saw the news. They're going to, you know, I mean, you got to stop it. You know what I'm saying? It's been stopped before, not at a high rate, but don't let them get 3rd-and-1. Don't let them get 4th-and-1. You know what's coming. You know what I'm saying? I play Philly a lot of times. They're a tough group, and, you know, they have a combination of players and a quarterback to make it very, you know, successful. So at the end of the day, you can't, I mean, the rules are the rules, and you got to find a way to stop it.
That's right. I mean, I like that's a healthy attitude. I would have assumed that most defensive players would have been more like, yeah, get rid of this thing. But that would be kind of weak if they would say something like that.
For sure. And so we'll see where it goes going forward. Listen, that's just another insight into who Grady Jarrett is. And like, maybe we get him for a little short side on the pod at some point, because that guy's a fun guy to talk to, fun guy to listen to. He's passionate all the time, and he's fun, and he's funny, and he's got a lot of juice to him too. How much I love the juice.
Oh, you know what? And I think you're rubbing off on me, man. Is the more I do these shows with you, the more the juice is in me as well. So that's a good sign. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to have a very bouncy 2-minute drill.
The 2-minute drill. The 2-minute drill.
We got a little news in our 2-minute drill today, Weedsy. It has been announced that the Bears preseason game against the Dolphins will be on Sunday, August 10th at noon. And maybe more interesting to everybody, and certainly to us as reporters that will be at Halas Hall every day, that the Bears will be hosting joint practices at Halas Hall with both Miami and Buffalo this summer. Another joint practices, which seems to be a very productive thing. Matt Eberflus was good at lining those up, and it continues on here with Ben Johnson.
First time ever that they will have done two of them back to back, and this is the trend in the league, where this is the kind of forum where teams are replacing preseason game action for their starters with controlled crossover action against other team starters. And so last year it was the Bengals coming to Halas Hall. This year they're going to do them both at Halas Hall with the Dolphins and the Bills. As you mentioned, that Miami game now scheduled for August 10th on a Sunday, the Bills game a week later on a Sunday night, and then the Bears will wrap up the preseason in Kansas City on a Friday night. Look, like, it'll be fun. It'll be fun to bring those teams to Halas Hall. Miami has come here for crossover practices previously. I can't remember if that was in the Nagy era or first year of flu, so I'd have to go back and triple check and see what that one was.
I see myself sitting on the bleachers in the end zone talking about the Miami Dolphins with a Dolphins reporter, but I can't remember what year that was.
Yeah, right. I'm going to guess 22, but I'm not for certain on that. We can look that up. So that's news, and now we've got the preseason slate locked in. The other part about getting that August 10th preseason game date is it gives us a chance to rewind to the opening day of training camp, which should be 2 weeks prior to that. On a Wednesday, and off we go.
Joe Tooney got his extension. He was front and center at the podium with us. Not a ton to take away other than the fact that he was asked the question, like, at what point did you decide that you wanted to be here for your future? And I kind of liked his answer. It was, something, paraphrasing that as the days went by, as the weeks, but he realized that this is where he wanted to be, that he loves the history of the Bears and seems to have gotten used to his surroundings. And I like that answer, because it's got to be huge culture shock for him in a lot of different ways, man. Yeah. Coming from a championship team with a championship quarterback to an organization that has struggled mightily over the decades. But it is Chicago. It is Halas Hall.
It's a guy that the Bears have talked about his leadership as much as they've talked about his play since they traded for him in March. $35 million tacked on to the deal. That keeps him under contract with the Bears through 2027. He will be 35 when that contract ends. It'll be interesting to see if he can still play at that high of a level at that stage of his career. This also gives the Bears a chance to move some money around for the present day, and if they desire creating some salary cap space for a potential move here in the coming months. So we'll see if that translates into anything or just gives them a little bit of flexibility as they go forward. But Tooney's certainly a guy that they prioritized in free agency and are now prioritizing for the next 3 years.
Lastly, I don't know if you guys know this about Dan Wiederer, but apparently he is Mr. Flag Football because Dan was raising his hand, asking guys, or I guess it was just Byard. Was it just Byard?
Just Byard, yeah, just kid.
Flag football? I mean, he was the perfect guy to ask about that because he's good and playful and fun and all that kind of stuff. But you ready for flag football in the Olympics? And it sounds like Kevin Byard likes it, but probably wouldn't participate.
I'm personally not all that into the Olympic aspect of this. I love flag football. I understand the NFL's desire to grow the game and give people like my son, who's very small, a chance to play football and really be competitive with it and rock and roll. It was we'll talk about this more when you and I do the score afternoon show on Friday.
Yes.
KB was he was a good guy to ask, just mostly because on Wednesday we weren't going to ask Grady Jarrett or Joe Tooney about playing football, right? Like, I don't think that's their game.
They don't cut well. Yeah.
Very interesting that the NFL has approved this. It's my understanding that it would be a maximum of one player from every team would be able to go compete in the Olympics. 2028 in LA, so that's a little bit up the road. We don't know who's going to be where in their careers at that point. The other part of this is that's going to be in late July, and so anybody that goes to the Olympics to compete in flag football is probably going to miss a little bit of training camp, which is a unique situation. You know who's going to be a great guy to ask about this? Jonathan Owens, because he can be an Olympian alongside his wife, Simone Biles, if he's still around in 2028. I would imagine he'd be interested in qualifying for the flag football team, and then they can go to LA together and live in the village or wherever they want to go and have a good time.
This is why you're Dan Wieder, man. That's next level thinking, right? Jonathan Owens, it could Matt and be as popular as his wife. Finally.
Hey, listen, goat, I got a gold medal too, right? Like she's got 75 hanging from the fireplace in their house, and maybe he can grab one too.
Seriously, man. And yes, as a final note here from me anyway, Dan and I will be hosting on The Score on Friday from 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. So much more Bears talk. We'll get into more of on The Score of what we saw on the field and the offensive line and some of the early configurations. A lot, so much of it is not real at this moment, but we'll get way into that. And I actually do have some flag football stories as a flag football announcer.
Oh wow.
And that I want to share during that show on Friday, 10 a.m. or 2 p.m. Oh yeah, that's a teaser alert. And you and I and I, there was a third person, Matt Zahn from Channel 2. The three of us were walking from the Walter Payton Center back to Hallis Hall to do our work, and we were all talking about cold weather amateur baseball. So look out. We're going to really get into some stuff on Friday, man.
Shaking the tree, and getting everything we can to fall out of it there. Yeah, it should be fun. One last little footnote for me on the OTAs. We'll be back out there next week. There were three draft picks missing from the field on Wednesday that included Colson Loveland, who we obviously know is still rehabbing from the shoulder surgery. Luther Burden, Ben Johnson told us, is dealing with a soft tissue issue, so his availability next week will be worth tracking. Zay Frazier, another guy that was unable to get on the field. Kyler Gordon's absence, one we didn't get any answers to. Yeah. Nobody got around to that and all the questions we had to ask, but where was Kyler Gordon on Wednesday? That's one that we have to file away and get a peek at. I think that's basically the extent of the notables that were missing. Obviously, Braxton Jones still hurt. Elijah Hicks, Terrell Smith weren't out there, but so attendance is something we'll be keeping track of for the rest of May and into early June.
Amen. Yeah, and Dan and I will get into it all Friday, 10 a.m. on The Score. And so for Dan Wiederer of the Chicago Tribune and The Score, our executive producer, Adam Staszynski, I am Mark Grody saying thank you for watching and listening to the Take the North podcast.
Great talk. See you out there.
Thank you, everybody. Your Bears.